Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, I think it's about time that we should start. We were waiting a little bit more as more people had indicated the willingness to come, so we gave them a few more minutes, but now it is time. I'm Virginia Gamba. I'm the Director and Deputy to the High Representative for Disarmament Affairs, the Office for Disarmament Affairs here in headquarters. I'm also officer in charge today, and that means that I won't be able to stay with you for the duration, but I will stay as long as I can with you. I wanted to give you welcome to this event. Thank you very much for coming. I think you will find it extremely interesting, as we did. And as you know, this event was co-organized by my office and the Stockholm Institute for Peace Research, CIPRI, and it has been sponsored very kindly by the Japanese mission. I really hope you had time to enjoy your light lunch, courtesy of the Japanese mission. And I really think you're going to find some very interesting information that will come out of today's launch on military expenditures. As you know, today is the Global Day of Action on Military Spending, and this coincides very nicely with this launch. The initiative was started in the year 2011 and has since been marked every year around the world to raise awareness on the issue of excessive military spending. And if you had not done so, today the High Representative for Disarmament Affairs, Ms. Angela Kane, my USG, my boss, has issued a very interesting statement that is already available in the web to celebrate the day. I want to make a special mention to Japan. They have always been there for us on this very historic moment. We have held joint events many times over the last 3 years, always on this issue. And this is a continuation of the series started in 2011. Today, we will hear from Ambassador Umemoto, who is the Deputy Permanent Representative of Japan to the United Nations. And I really am delighted to share the podium with him at this time. I cannot say, I was just commenting to him that perhaps the Office for Disarmament Affairs has got a spirit of Japan in the very marrow of its activities. And we feel a very close connection to the objectives and aspirations and the wishes of Japan in on issues of particularly nuclear non-proliferation and military expenditures. So it really is a great pleasure to have you with us today, and without further ado, we will hear you out.
Thank you. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, dear colleagues, it is a great pleasure for me to co-host with CIPRI and UNODA this event on world military spending. First of all, I would like to thank you, Dr. San Pedro Freeman, Dr. Anthony Kosman, Dr. John Pfeffer, and Mr. Hideki Matsuno, and all the participants in this room for being with us today. And also thank you goes to Ms. Gamba for sharing your time with us. Deliberations of the UN Disarmament Commission are now taking place at the UN. And one of the two important themes is practical confidence-building measures. I think everyone can agree that one of the keys to confidence-building is transparency. There are many measures that could improve transparency, but sharing objective data among states is one of the most promising ways. In this context, I am very pleased to co-host this event with both CIPRI and UNODA, since they have been collecting data and making public the world military expenditure in a most objective manner, as well as promoting a reporting mechanism, especially the UN Register of Conventional Arms and UN report on military expenditures. I would like to take this opportunity to thank CPRI and UNODA for their efforts, and I hope today's discussion will be a good impetus for the UNDC deliberations so they can result in a concrete outcome for the first time in 15 years. In the efforts of disarmament and non-proliferation, it is important for us to objectively assess the realities that today's international community faces. There are increasingly diverse risks. I would like to mention that improved transparency through objective data and an assessment are very helpful in this regard, and I'm all the more looking forward to the discussion today. Year 2014 is a very important and busy year for disarmament and non-proliferation, especially here in New York. First of all, after the current session of the UNDC ends, we expect to come up with a concrete outcome. But that's just the beginning. Right after the UNDC, the third session of the Preparatory Committee for the 2015 Review Conference of the Parties to the NPT will begin. And then, the fifth biennial meeting of states to consider the implementation of the UN Program of Action on Small Arms and Light Weapons will be held in June. It's an important year, not only because of these international conferences. We have just celebrated the first anniversary of the adoption of the Arms Trade Treaty in this month. And the first anniversary of the opening for signature is awaiting us in June. Japan, as one of the co-authors of the ATT, has worked hard to make this happen, and we stand ready to continue to work hard to achieve early entry into force and effective implementation of the treaty. In this context, I would just like to share with you that the Japanese lower house gave approval to conclude the treaty on April 10, just a few days ago. We still await approval of the upper house, but I hope we will be able to deposit our conclusion document in the very near future. It is clear that we need strong political will and natural trust for continued success, and I hope we can make use of today's discussions in our future endeavors. Thank you very much. Thank you.
And the time has come to look at the data that CPRI brings to us this year. I confess I have a soft spot for CPRI. I used to be a researcher there, 1986-87, on nuclear threshold states. Mm-hmm. And since that moment on, I've always regarded the work of CPRI as fundamental to the work of states and also for scholars worldwide, and why not civil society. It produces very interesting information that is widely available, and I hope that they will continue with this mission for decades to come. So it's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Sam Perlo Freeman, who is currently the head of Military Expenditure Project and a senior researcher with the CPRI Military Expenditure and Arms Production Program. He is responsible for monitoring data on military expenditure worldwide. Previously, he was a senior lecturer at the University of the West of England. He holds two PhDs, one in economics from the University of the West of England and the other in mathematics from the University of Warwick. Dr. Perlo.
Thank you very much, Damba, and Your Excellency Ambassador Umemoto. Thank you, and
microphone, please.
Organizing and
hit the button on your mic.
That one. Yes, thank you very much to Ambassador Umemoto and Councillor Fukuhori of the Japanese Mission for kindly once again co-hosting and organising this event, and thanks to Virginia Tom Hideki at the UNODA for also co-organising the event. And thanks also to my fellow panellists, Dr. John Pfeffer and Dr. Anthony Kortzman, who will be providing some discussion and comments on the data that I'll be presenting. So CIPRI have been collecting military expenditure data worldwide since the late 1960s. Our current database provides consistent data on most countries worldwide from 1988 up to the present day. Our data for 2013 just went live today and is freely available online on our website for download. So I will talk a bit about some of the key points and trends that come out of our data released this year. So the headline figure, the world total for military expenditure, we estimate to be $1,747 billion. It is an estimate. There are a lot of uncertainties, a lot of countries where there's missing data, a lot of countries where the figures are not so certain. But we think it's a pretty good estimate. So that's our figure. It's a fall of 1.9% in real terms compared to 2012. That's the second time in a row that the world total has fallen after many years of increase. And the fall is big enough that despite the uncertainties I've talked about, we are confident that world military spending did fall in 2013. The total represents about 2.4% of global GDP, about the same as last year. However, this headline fall is made up of two very clearly separate identifiable trends. One is falling military spending in what you might call the West, the US, Western and Central Europe, Oceania, and increasing military spending in just about every other part of the world. But as so often, the US trend dominates what happens worldwide. And in fact, if you were to take the rest of the world, leaving out the US, military spending actually increased in 2013. So the fall can be entirely accounted for by what happened in the US. Looking at it in a bit of a longer perspective, with figures as far as back as our consistent data goes to 1988. We see, of course, the big falls at the end of the Cold War. We have a gap in 1991, as there's no data for the Soviet Union in that year. Then bottoming out in the mid-1990s and beginning to rise, again dominated by US increases, but also worldwide increases. This is during the years of the Bush administration and the early years of the Obama administration, post 9/11. And then gradually, as the global economic crisis made its effect felt, especially, of course, in the West, but also in other parts of the world, reaching a peak and beginning to fall, but still higher than that previous. It was about a peak towards the end of the Cold War. Breaking it down a bit regionally, the pattern that we saw last year, what I've said, falls in the West, increases in the rest, is, if anything, even clearer this year. In North America, Western Europe, and Oceania, two-thirds of countries cut military spending. And in the rest of the world, just over 70% of the countries for whom we have data increased military spending in 2013. So it's a very pronounced pattern between these two different categories. This is what's happened with the top 15 countries. So falls in US, France, UK, Italy, Brazil, and Australia, and previously in the top 15, Canada. Brazil's a bit one exception to the sort of pattern of major countries in the rest of the world increasing. And increases in in China, Russia, Saudi Arabia, South Korea, and Turkey. Saudi Arabia notably has become the fourth largest spender in the world, which is a position they've never held before. And just looking at the real terms, changes region by region, small fall in the world. As you can see, the biggest percentage increase in Africa, over 8%, and substantial increases also in Eastern Europe, in the Middle East, and Asia and Oceania, smaller in Latin America, it would be a lot higher but for that fall in Brazil, whereas a big fall in North America and also falls in Western and Central Europe. And looking over a slightly longer period, a 10-year period, first of all, the big spending regions, North America at the top, it's been turning down for the last few years. Asia and Oceania still on an increasing path, Western and Central Europe flat and then turning down. I think it's interesting to note a sort of point of inflection in 2009 when Western Europe starts falling, but also even in Asia and Oceania, the pace of increase goes down. And this is perhaps a knock-on effect, again, of the slower growth in the wake of the global economic crisis. In the other regions, it's a fairly unambiguous pattern of increasing spending almost every year in each of these regions, Middle East, Eastern Europe, a bit more slowly in Latin America and in Africa, still very low in absolute terms, but increasing rapidly. Nonetheless, despite this pattern of trends, North America, Western and Central Europe do still account for a clear majority of world military spending in 2013. Of course, Asia and Oceania is now even bigger, but the other developing regions, emerging regions, while growing fast, are still relatively small. One statistic I worked out for those thinking that the West is losing its dominance, if you consider the US, NATO, and those countries the US classes as major non-NATO allies, between them they account for 64% of world military spending. So 64% is either US or close US allies. I'll skip over that one. I'll just say a little bit briefly about some specific regional trends. I'll skip the US, they're the most important, as I think that's very widely discussed over here, but rather less discussed is military spending in Africa, which, as I said, had the highest increase of any of the regions we covered, especially in North Africa, which has more than doubled military spending since 2004. Algeria has the possible distinction, dubious distinction, of becoming the first African country to spend over $10 billion on the military in 2013. And Angola has overtaken South Africa as the highest spender in sub-Saharan Africa. Both of these countries' spending has doubled since 2000, in Algeria's case trebled. In both these cases, and in quite a lot of others in Africa, Chad, for example, fueled by growing oil revenues, and quite a high share of GDP in each case at 4.8%, which for developing countries is an extremely high share. But it's not just these big players. Two-thirds of African countries for which CIPRI has data increased military spending in 2013. I'll skip over Asia and the Middle East, as my colleagues will be talking about that. Briefly, in Latin America, a small rate of growth held back by the fall in Brazil. Brazil has great power, or at least regional power ambitions. It sees military power as a part of that, but they're also a democracy with a lot of other priorities, demonstrations demanding higher education spending, which has happened. So military spending has to compete with these other social priorities. But in the rest of the region, military spending has still been increasing. In Central America and Mexico, most obviously linked to the militarization of the war against drug cartels. In Europe, again in the West and Central Europe, austerity is still the dominant trend affecting military spending as others. Central Europe has seen almost all countries have significant falls since 2008. But there's now quite a lot of Western European countries that have joined that list in having at least a 10% fall since then. On the other hand, spending in Eastern Europe has gone up very significantly, led, of course, by Russia, and perhaps there'll be some questions on that score lately, as it's a region of interest at the moment. And again, of course, it's possible that events currently in Ukraine may change the trend in the region. Again, Dr. Cordesman, I'm sure, will talk about the Middle East. So I will finish there. This is just a curiosity, looking at the regional share of military expenditure in GDP, at least in each region. So I'll just leave you to peruse that, if you will, and I will finish there. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you very much. My name is Randy Rydell. I'm in the Office for Disarmament Affairs, and I'm sitting in for Virginia Gamba because she had to leave to attend to some other business in the office. I'm extremely pleased to introduce our next speaker, who was a former colleague of mine working in the U.S. Senate. I was there between 1987 and 98, and we worked together on often in dealing with issues of relating to nonproliferation at the time. Dr. Cordesman is the Arleigh Burke Chair in Strategy at the Center for Security and International Studies in Washington, and is a internationally renowned military analyst on national and international security and global conflicts, particularly in the Middle East and the Gulf. He has also directed a number of studies on energy policies and has written extensively on oil and energy risks and issues. Dr. Cordesman was a professor of national security studies at Georgetown University and at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars at the Smithsonian Institution. Dr. Cordesman, welcome to the UN.
Thank you very much, and let me thank the organizers as well. If I could have the first slide. I thought it might be interesting. We often talk about regions, but people buy and spend for arms races. They don't really spend on geography. And this is simply the SIPRI data I'm going to be discussing. There are some areas where I had to extrapolate to get a trend model. But if we go to the next slide, you see what is a very, very sharp arms race, and one that is sharply intensifying in an area critical to the world, because so much of the world's oil exports come from this region. That top line is the Southern Gulf states. It doesn't include Iraq. It doesn't include Yemen. It doesn't deal with the crisis in Syria. But it is basically where countries are spending to deal with either deterring or defending or going to war with each other. And you will see that the Gulf Cooperation Council countries, in spite of the fact that the U.S. increased its military presence in the Gulf last year, are spending and steadily increasing their spending. Iran is on this model kept at a relatively constant level in the out years. Part of the problem here, however, is that all military expenditure data are not equal. And the data that you see reported here do not seem to include the investment Iran is making in missiles. And they do not include, because of the uncertainties involved, the nuclear program. And we know from unclassified satellite photography that there has been a major increase in facilities, the size and structure of them. Whether they are for nuclear weapons or not, I will leave to another discussion. But it is an important caveat. That's generally true. I was going to come to that in a moment. Next slide, please. Part of our problem here is all of these countries are very sharply increasing paramilitary forces, not just Iran. And there is the question of what is a paramilitary force. One of the problems you have throughout this region, and you do in many developing countries, is that there not only are special police and paramilitary units, there are special state justice systems which, for security purposes, can use these forces in ways which bypass the ordinary rule of law. And this is an issue where we are talking about civil-military problems. But once again, as we look at this, you see the increase in Saudi forces, which has not only a large National Guard, now a separate ministry, but a Ministry of the Interior, which is probably spending now more on national security than a great many countries are spending on their armed forces. One thing that you also see here is most of these expenditures are not driven by perceptions of the nuclear issue. They're driven by a major military buildup in the Gulf itself and outside the Gulf. This is in terms of ships, air power, missiles, rockets, surface-to-air defenses. These are not countries which are buying for status or glitter factor. These are countries basically that are buying to go to war. Whether they go to war is a totally different issue. And remember, behind all of this, as you look at Iran, there is the fact that the United States, Britain, and France also deploy significant forces in this region. One of the difficulties here, and this is true of all international data, one of the things that you almost have to beat people to death with a stick is there is no such thing as a reliable figure in international data. If you do not question it, you are showing an act of faith, which would allow me to be your investment advisor after this meeting. It doesn't matter whether it is GDP, GDI, or anything else. And this is illustrated with what happened with a competitor of CIPRI in the IISS. If you look at those two red figures, for 2 years they suddenly decided they would try to cost all of Iran's national security expenditures. People who take data without asking exactly where it comes from and how it's defined by year on any aspect of military forces can easily get a very misleading picture. Next. Now, these data are not from CIPRI. They are declassified figures which come from the U.S. intelligence community. What's interesting about them, and this to some extent illustrates what happens with groups like the Revolutionary Guard, these figures strongly imply that countries are spending far more than they publicly report, because you couldn't possibly have this level of arms imports and actually finance a balanced force structure if that was an honest budget figure. Now, having worked in the Gulf and having been a consultant to some of these countries, I would say they are no less accurate than most countries are in reporting military spending. But I would say that you need to be very, very careful. And what are they buying? A lot of it is some of the most modern combat aircraft, surface-to-air missiles, missile defenses, and ships possible. And here we get into a point I'd just like to make about comparative spending. Even if it's in constant dollars, it doesn't mean it's comparable. Some professional forces, which are not all volunteer professional forces, spend 17 to 18 times as much per soldier as conscript armies do. People do not pay the same price for arms. I have seen contracts where a country was spending 30% to 40% more per weapon for the same weapon, and they were neighbors. This is a business where you get everything you can. It is not a matter of altruistic arms shipments. There is here a tremendous leverage effect because all of the countries except Iran can buy the most advanced arms that Russia, Europe, the United States, and China provide, with the exception of missiles, where China has to be somewhat cautious about its new missile transfers to Saudi Arabia. Iran, since 1980, has not been able to buy modern arms in any significant numbers. The only system that's really modern that is bought in the last decade is a very limited number of short-range surface-to-air missiles called the TOR-M. So the caution I would give you here is if we go from regional spending to impacts on the balance, you need to look at the order of battle, you need to look at actual arms orders, you need to look at weapons deliveries, and you need to question your figures. And I wouldn't really call this particular aspect of arms control trying to counter a liar's contest, but I'm not quite sure I would call it all that much something different.
As for future sales, next slide, and I'll conclude with this.
Next one, please, sorry. Next. The bars, go back one. These are new arms transfers. The reason I showed this is that these now lag behind by about 3 years. If you total up the arms exports for the six southern Gulf countries, U.S. estimates that the arms in the pipeline now total $72.6 billion worth of arms orders. And that means it is a good idea to look toward the future and not just the present. And with that, let me conclude.
Thank you. It's now my pleasure to introduce Dr. John Pfeffer. He is an author and currently co-director of the Foreign Policy in Focus at the Institute of Policy Studies in Washington. He is a fellow at the Open Society Foundation and the author of several books, including on Islam, on U.S. policy toward Korea, and American foreign policy during the President George W. Bush period, and other books. Dr. Pfeffer also is a playwright, having written several plays which were performed at the 2013 Washington Capitol Fringe Festival and other places. Dr. Pfeffer, welcome to the UN.
Thank you very much for the invitation to speak here. It's my great pleasure to be here. As you'll notice, I have to apologize. I don't have a PowerPoint presentation. I have to apologize a second time. I will not be doing anything dramatic as part of my theatrical performances. Instead, I'm going to give you a little bit of a qualitative assessment of spending in the Asia-Pacific region. And to do that, I'm going to talk about three Pacific pivots, two of which you've probably not heard of, one of which you probably have heard of. The first Pacific pivot. Last year, in 2012, according to some data, although not CIPRI data, Asia, for the first time as a region, surpassed Europe in terms of military spending. If we look at the CIPRI data, that will happen probably next year. But this is an important trend. If we're looking at volume of military spending, not rate of increase, volume, then the volume of what the Asia-Pacific region is spending is enormous. I mean, if you look at page 5 in the trends in world military expenditure, where you have, fortunately, Middle East and Asia and Oceania on the same page, you can see for Asia and Oceania, $407 billion versus the Middle East, $150 billion. And East Asia alone, $282 billion. We're talking about an enormous volume of military spending in Asia. Between 2008 and 2012, again, this is before the most recent CIPRI figures, the top five importers of arms were all from Asia. And that included Singapore, a city-state, which is actually quite remarkable that a city-state would make it into the top five. For 2013, as you're familiar from Sam's presentation, the increase has been 3.6% over last year, 4.7% for East Asia, 5% for Southeast Asia. Over the last 10 years, an increase of 62%. What would seem, on the face of it, an arms race, an incredible arms race taking place in Asia today. What might be somewhat surprising to learn is that the term arms race was not applied to Asia until recently, because technically speaking, an arms race is reciprocal spending. North Korea spends, increases its military spending in response to what South Korea is doing. South Korea increases its military spending in response to what North Korea was doing. But 10 years ago or so, 8 to 10 years ago, that was not the case between North and South Korea. North and South Korea were engaged in something called the Sunshine Policy of Kim Dae-jung. And yet, at that time, Kim Dae-jung and his successor, Noh Moo-hyun, announced an enormous increase in South Korean military expenditures at the same time that they were negotiating various confidence-building mechanisms with North Korea. North Korea, meanwhile, was putting an enormous amount of resources into its nuclear program, a nuclear program which, in fact, was not a response specifically to South Korea, but a response, and this is my interpretation, to the gap in conventional capabilities in the region as a whole. But more recently, it has become evident that what we have in the Asia-Pacific region is an arms race. In other words, reciprocal spending on the part of neighboring countries. What are the drivers of this enormous increase in spending in the Asia-Pacific region? Well, of course, there are a lot of different drivers. The Asia-Oceania region, of course, includes South Asia, so the conflict between India and Pakistan is a major driver of arms spending. Identified in the SIPRI report, of course, is the major increase in Chinese military spending. U.S. military spending, responsible for the decrease in global military expenditures, nevertheless has an impact on increases in military spending in Asia. And I'll get to that in a moment. We have a number of territorial conflicts, which I'm sure you're all well aware of, mostly conflicts over what seem to be very small islands. And for those of us who don't live in Asia or perhaps are not familiar with these conflicts, we might read the newspaper and wonder why there is so much conflict over what seems to be uninhabited and minor pieces of territory. But of course, those minor pieces of territory also have tremendous resources beneath them and offer, through maritime boundaries, an enormous potential wealth for whomever controls those very, very small islands. A traditional driver of spending in the region, of course, is the conflict between North and South Korea. And I would say even Japan, which traditionally has kept its spending to an informal level of, or beneath, of 1% of its GDP, has announced it too will be increasing its spending by 2.8% 2014 and 2015. So we have a number of drivers. The one I skipped over, of course, is the Pacific pivot that you are aware of, and that is the Pacific pivot that's been announced by the Obama administration, although it prefers to use a different name these days, and that's strategic rebalancing. The Pacific pivot itself does not entail enormous increases in U.S. spending in its Pacific Command. For the most part, the Pacific pivot is a realignment of forces in the region. However, the Pacific pivot does include an encouragement, and I use that word in quotation marks, an encouragement of U.S. allies to step forward. What has been called burden sharing in the past, our allies South Korea, Japan, Thailand, Philippines, Australia, to step up to the plate and spend more on their militaries, even as the U.S. scales back slightly in Pentagon spending. An encouragement to purchase U.S. weapons. It's more than an encouragement. The U.S. government puts enormous pressure on our allies to buy U.S. weapons because if they don't, their entire systems threaten to become not interoperable. In other words, they won't fit into all the other systems they've bought from the U.S. U.S. exports traditionally go up. When I say traditionally, we have the experience of the 1990s as an example. Traditionally go up when Pentagon spending has gone down. If U.S. military manufacturers are not getting the same level of Pentagon contracts, they have to supplement that somewhere else. And that somewhere else has been overseas. During the Clinton administration, there was a boost by the administration quite deliberately in arms sales overseas. And the Obama administration has facilitated, streamlined the process for exporting U.S. weaponry. U.S. exports over the last 10 years has more than doubled, by the way. What is also remarkable about the Asia-Pacific region is that there aren't any wars going on there. In other words, there's this incredible increase over the last decade or more in military spending without there being any overt conflict. There have been some clashes. Of course, you're well aware, I'm sure, of the shelling of Yongpyeong Island by North Korea, the sinking of the Chunnan. So there have been clashes, but there is no outright war. And I think that leads many of us into a certain belief that arms increases in the region won't generate conflict. But with the increased tension around these small islands, these territorial conflicts, with continued tensions involving North Korea, I would say that a spark could very well engage these enormous armies. A spark, and of course we're talking about 2014 here, the 100th anniversary of the outbreak of World War I. It's not just me who has made these references to 1914 and how a small spark can engage a much larger conflict. Prime Minister Abe himself made a reference to 1914 and the possibility that such a scenario could take place in Asia as well. Let me finish by mentioning the third Pacific pivot. The first one is this pivot by which Asia has surpassed Europe in overall military expenditures. The second is what the U.S. is engaged in terms of strategic rebalancing in the region. And now let me conclude with the third Pacific pivot. We heard a little bit about GDAM's Global Day of Action on Military Spending. And right now, around the world, more than 100 events are taking place. In Cairo, in Kerala, in Korea, more than 50 here in the United States, all of them saying that we are spending too much on militaries. All countries are spending too much on the military. The kind of pivot that people are calling for, especially in the Pacific region, in the Asia-Pacific region, is a pivot not in the overall balance of military expenditures, but in budget priorities. And so the third Pacific pivot is a pivot away from military spending and towards other priorities. I'm sure you're well aware that we have the IPCC report that is just coming out saying that we have a 15-year window ahead of us to deal with climate change. If we do not deal with climate change in this 15-year window, we are... Well, you can supply your own expletive. Where's the money going to come from to pay for dealing with climate change? Well, the easy response is military budgets. But we as individuals and groups and countries and international institutions have to make that commitment. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Pfeffer. Our next speaker is my colleague in the Office for Disarmament Affairs, Hideki Matsuno. He's a political affairs officer in the Conventional Arms Branch. And he's currently responsible for two of our UN transparency instruments, the United Nations Report on Military Expenditures and the United Nations Register of Conventional Arms. Hideki has also been working on small arms and light weapons issues, coordinating the Secretariat's support for the second review conference on the Program of Action on the Illicit Trade in Small Arms and Light Weapons in 2012. And before he joined the United Nations, he was a member of Japan's self-defense forces. Hideki, you have the floor.
Thank you, Randy, and good afternoon, distinguished delegates and colleagues. In this last year's event on the GDAMS Day, which ODA also co-organized with CIPRI, with the sponsorship of the Japanese mission, our ODA director, Virginia Gamba, mentioned that the global military spending remained at a very high level, while transparency in military spending has declined. And unfortunately, this year, the trend has continued and even exacerbated a little slightly. So in this presentation, I would like to focus on the issue of transparency in military spending, especially at the regional level, and how it correlates with the military overall military spending. So first, a short background on the UN instrument on the military expenditure. It is called UN Report on Military Expenditures, or MILEX. It was established in 1981. It is an instrument by which member states are called on to voluntarily report on the military expenditures for the last fiscal year. Member states can report in either standard form or simplified form, or those states that have no military can still submit new form. Deadline is 30 April every year, and over the course of 30 years, over 120 states have participated at least once. And the reports provided by states are compiled and published as a report of the Secretary General. And the reports are also available on the UN ODA database at the following URL. This graph shows the global trend. You can see that in the first two decades following its launch, 1980s and 1990s, the participation level has been quite low, with 20 to 35 states participating every year. The number has increased in 2000s, when we had around 80 states reporting every year. And this is mainly due to the introduction of simplified reporting form and the NIL form. However, the number has gone down slightly in the last few years. In 2013, last year, the number has improved slightly from the previous year. So this state, excuse me, this graph shows two data. One is the total global military spending taken from the CIPRI data in a blue bar chart. And the red is the number of, or rather a percentage of UN member states submitting report to the MILEX. So you will see the same trend. The reporting on MILEX has gone up in the first decade of the new millennium. The next graph shows the coverage or the extent of coverage by the MILEX, even though every year only in recent years 50 or 60 UN member states or one-third of UN member states report every year, it actually captures about 70% of global military spending. we got this data by converting the report submitted by states into U.S. dollar and added all of them up. So this is an example from 2009. That year, according to CIPRI, I think $1.7 trillion global military spending, and the military spending reported to MILEX totals to about $1.2 trillion. This table shows the top 15 military spenders according to CIPRI 2012 data, and the green country in green shows the ones that reported in 2012. So out of 15 states, 10 states have submitted report. And the five states that did not submit report, only Saudi Arabia have never participated in MILEX. In other words, the other four countries have participated actually quite frequently in the past, but for some reason they are not consistent and happen not to submit in that particular year. So now we look at the participation to MILEX by regions. Light blue shows the state number of states or percentage of states who have submitted report. Dark blue who did not submit report for the 2013. So Eastern Europe and Western Europe and others group, the two bottom pie shows that they have participated at high rate, 70 to 91%, while other three regions, Africa, Latin American, Caribbean, Asian Pacific, most of the states did not participate. 94% of African states, 94% of Asian Pacific states did not report. So in the next two or three slides, we are going to show some regional trend in terms of spending and reporting. So first one is Western Europe and others group. This shows the data from 2001 to 2012. The red line is the total spending by region, and the blue is the percentage of reporting to the MILEX. So you can see that the spending has declined slightly in recent years, and the recent, the percentage has seen a more sharp decline. Eastern Europe, the military spending in red line shows gradual or constant increase. And reporting remains at a very high level, between 65 to 90%. Africa also has seen a gradual or very steady increase in military spending, while the reporting rate remains very low, at never exceeding 10%. Asia and Pacific is also similar to Africa, very steady increase in military spending over the years, while their military, while their reporting remains at the low level and has seen some decline, especially in the last several years. Latin America shows similar trend, constant increase in spending, and decline in reporting, especially in the last 3 to 4 years. So just to summarize the previous few charts, military spending down and transparency up is Western Europe and others group. By the way, this is a UN regional group, so it includes US, Australia, New Zealand, Israel. So it's slightly, it's quite different from CIPRI regional groupings. The other regions, Eastern Europe has seen increase in military spending, while the transparency also remains at high or increasing. The other three regions has seen both increase in military spending and decline in the reporting to the MILEX. There could be several possible reasons for these trends, especially for declining reporting rate. One could be the reporting fatigue, the number of UN instruments, GA resolutions requiring report from member states are increasing, so there may be an overburden on some of these countries that didn't report. Also, change in personnel and could be another reason for or decline in reporting. Another possibility is that small states who do not have military and therefore who used to submit new report in the past have ceased to do so, ceased to submit report in recent years. And the other cause could be the inconsistent reporting by those states who submit in 1 year and fail to do so in the next year. And the final possible cause is there are a number of states who have never reported to the MILEX instruments, and many of them are from Asia, particularly Middle East and Africa, who are increasing military spending. To conclude this presentation, I know there are many delegates from permanent mission in this room, so I would like to call on or encourage those delegates to submit report to the MILEX. Not verbal from UNODA was sent to all UN member states in February with a deadline of 30 April. States can submit report online or in a paper form. Online report, each member state has issued unique user ID and password to use the online reporting tool. So if they want to obtain password, they can contact the UNODA at the email address provided in the screen. And with that, I would like to conclude my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. We have approximately 20 minutes available for questions, and I think at this point I'll open the floor up to anyone who wishes to make a brief comment or ask a question of our speakers. Thank you. Sir?
Thank you. I would like to thank first ODA and CIPRI and also the mission of Japan for organizing this very interesting event. I have just one question to Dr. Sam from CIPRI. If he can remind us the methodology to collect data related to military spending. As comment, you know, just saying that military spending are falling or increasing, I think this kind of information is not, has no real value as far as there is no analytical comment, you know. If we take the case of Algeria, we say Algeria is spending too much money on its military spending, $10 billion. If there is really a study, you will see that we are renewing and modernizing our own equipment. And $10 billion, why? Because we are buying jet fighters, ships, helicopters. The heavy stuff, you know, costs too much money. That's why we go to $10 billion. So if you can, and also the other problem, we are fighting terrorism. We have security threats in our borders with Mali, with Libya, etc. You can provide more information, you know, just to say this country is increasing its military spending without more comments about to explain why. The value of your information could be more interesting instead to just saying falling or increasing. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comment. And in terms of your question, we follow, for the most part, a definition of military spending fairly similar to NATO's, including essentially all government financial resources for current military forces and activities. Where we differ from NATO is that we still include spending on paramilitary forces, which they used to include, but which they, for the most part, no longer include. We collect our data from a wide range of sources, open sources. We send questionnaires to countries, embassies. We collect budget documents and expenditure reporting documents of various sorts online and in print. Sometimes secondary sources, such as are provided by the International Monetary Fund and a number of other secondary sources. We sometimes get expert analyses of budgets or estimates based on expert methodologies for certain countries where there's particular issues in estimating total military spending. We analyse all the different sources for reliability, especially consistency over time. Our priority is always to have a series for each country that is consistent over time, even if it doesn't correspond exactly to the definition of military spending that that we want. Our second priority is, of course, to get it as close as possible to our definition. Where it doesn't conform to our definition, for example, where countries where the figures don't include military pension spending, we try as far as possible to footnote that to make it clear where it's not matching our definition. Obviously, I'll have to disagree with your claim that our data has no value. I would certainly agree, though, that it's only a starting point. And if you read what we produce in the SIPRI yearbook and elsewhere, there is actually we do try and do quite a lot of analysis on it. And of course, the data is out there freely available for other people to do analysis on it, which a great many people have in various different communities, media, academia, policy communities do in fact do. In the specific case of Algeria, of course, it's up. There's always specific reasons. It's up to Algeria to decide how to spend its money. It's a sovereign state like any other, but I think it's still worth asking questions. If saying that their spending is going up because you're buying a lot of advanced equipment only puts the question one further down the line as to why do you feel you need all the advanced equipment. It is certainly true Algeria has very real security threats from armed groups in Algeria, in Mali and elsewhere. But Algeria faced a far more devastating civil war in the 1990s and the early 2000s. And since that didn't stop, but at least calmed down a lot since 2002, Algerian military spending has only continued to increase and, if anything, accelerate.
Thank you very much to the Mission of Japan and to the other organizers. My name is Amr Al-Guili. I'm from the Permanent Mission of Egypt, and thank you for the presentations. It's quite useful to get this hard data that I think can be quite useful for our deliberations within the UN community. I have my two questions. You get the lion's share as SIPRI speaker, so my questions get to come to you as well. And the two questions are regarding the presentations, which I hope the organizers can provide us with later on. I trust the Mission of Japan will facilitate that for us. I'll be appreciative for that. When you group the countries, there are hundreds of ways of to group the countries. So when you say Western Central Europe, you could easily say NATO as well. And if you, the minute you say NATO, that includes countries outside of Europe, it includes countries in elsewhere or elsewhere as well. And then if you include Western countries in general, that or affiliate countries affiliated with Western countries that can even go way beyond and include Asia as well. So I would just cast, not doubt, but I would just cast, I would put some question marks next to the regional groupings that you've put, because it may provide some insights, but it also may, other groupings may also provide some other insights. So I was wondering, for example, if you can expand a little bit further on NATO and NATO quote-unquote affiliated countries, and how they would range in terms of military spending and the fluctuations thereby. The other question is related to this in a way, is about cumulative military spending. I mean, what we've most of what we've heard today is basically ratios and rates of change between a year and the other. It will be interesting to see the cumulative military spending from 1945, the post-World War II, up to now, and to see which region of the world and which political grouping and which military alliance in the world has spent more on its military expenditure. And that can help us draw insights about why some countries or some regions are simply trying to catch up. They're doing nothing but trying to catch up to the huge military spending that has happened 1945 and beyond. But your figures are useful, and keep on coming up with them.
Second point, I'll just say I fully agree that if you're looking at the military capability of a state, you can't just look at the current spending. You have to look at sort of accumulated equipment, technology, and so forth. I haven't done the exercise of adding everything up, but at least from 1988, our data's all there, so it can be done. In terms of NATO military spending, for NATO itself, this total dipped just below $1 trillion in 2013. So that's a clear majority of world military spending still by NATO alone. It was a bit above a trillion in the previous years. I think I'm right in saying that it's, if you include Canada, just below $1 trillion. But as I said before, if you include also US major non-NATO allies, Japan, South Korea, Australia, also a number of other non-traditionally Western countries like Pakistan, Morocco, Argentina, Thailand, you get to 64% of world military spending in 2013 is NATO plus major non-NATO allies.
We have a request here for a right of reply, I believe.
Thank you. Everyone is free to say whatever they want to say. I would like to comment the press release from CPRI. We understand CPRI is an independent institution. However, when you read the press release, the understanding, you know, could be different. You have the titles, for example, military spending continues to fall in the West. How is the share of the West in the military spending? It's 64% of the total of military spending. So to say that the fall of the military expenditure in the West, I think is not real analytical information. And then the press release is highlighting specific country, Saudi Arabia and Iraq, Africa, China. You know, in other parts of the world, the military spending is also high or increasing, or, you know, the volume, the share is more important than those highlighted for Africa or any country that is referred in this document. So I don't see the neutrality of this body in his press release. Thank you.
You can never talk about everything in a short press release. I'd suggest you read the full fact sheet. The full set of data is there, and later read the CPRI yearbook chapter. of course, there's always judgments to be made about what to talk about and what not to talk about, and it's perfectly reasonable for you to want to talk about something else that we've not done. So we've made a selection. Everyone has to.
I see that there are two more questions that have been raised, and I wonder if we could just entertain those questions now and then ask the speakers to address them. Sir?
Thank you, and be very brief. And thank you so much, CIPRI and Permanent Mission of Japan and ODA for the event. I found it interesting to see my own country, Brazil, as being one of the exceptions to the rule of decreasing military expenditures in northern countries, so as to say, and increasing military expenditures in southern emerging countries. I think that your assessment is interesting. I'm sure that the other reasons for our military spending have been fallen from 2012 to 2013, but I believe that the, as you said, competing social and internal demands is an important factor. I also thought it very interesting to see the relation between the 15 top spenders and the UN military expenditure report. But on the presentation, I believe that when there was a table showing that the status of reporting for those countries, and just a disclaimer that I believe our country was mentioned as non-reporting for 2012. And as far as I'm concerned, that's not the case. We did report late, but it was submitted to the, I believe, in the end of 2013. I don't know, Hideki, if that's really the case, if you could reveal that information. Thank you.
Thank you very much to all the panelists, also the Mission of Japan for organizing this. Also, my comment is in line with my Brazilian colleagues. In the 2012 reporting, Turkey was shown as not having reported. However, we did report. Just check that perhaps there was a technical mistake, and we will follow through, and you'll have it by most likely today if there was a mistake. And follow-up question to CIPRI. In the arms transfers list, Turkey was mentioned for the first time last year in the Middle East. As far as MILEX, is that the case?
We include Turkey in Europe for MILEX.
Thank you very much. That is very important for the credibility of the information. Not that we're obsessed with being part of Europe. We take pride in being part of Asia, Europe, and Middle East all together at the same time. But in terms of consistency with the previous years and Turkey's NATO membership and being part of OSCE, it's only scientifically logical that we'll be included in Europe. Thank you.
Those of you who haven't been to the UN Visitors Center, I encourage you to go there maybe after this meeting and pay a visit. You'll find a large display about military spending using data from CIPRI. And the quote on the top of that display reads, is a quote from Ban Ki-moon, our Secretary General. He says that the world is overarmed and peace is underfunded. And to back up his quote, we have a digital clock ticking off the rate of military expenditure. We took the $1.7 trillion figure that CIPRI had and calibrated it down to the minute, actually to the second. And we found that this rate of military spending is about $5.6 billion a day in military spending, $5.6 billion a day. And just for some context, that's roughly double the UN regular budget for 2 years. So that's some food for thought and perhaps a good note for concluding this particular session. Ambassador, do you have some closing remarks you'd like?
Well, I just want to thank you very much for attending this very important and also very interesting session, and particularly my thanks goes to all the people who have organized this event and also the panelists for excellent presentations. Thank you very much.